Hello friends. How are you today? My name is Marion. Thank you so much for tuning in to Alban Berg and Clorox today. Our topic today is Alban Berg's Wozzeck and Clorox, a study. This podcast is sponsored by PodBot. Let's face it, buddy. Your content is not the best thing since sliced bread. I mean, all things considered, you make pretty good content. But not a whole lot of people want to take the time out of their day to concentrate on reading your latest political rant or narcissistic personal story. Don't take this the wrong way. Your content is good. But it's not good like a fancy meal in an expensive restaurant. Your content is good like a cheeseburger and soda at a drive-thru. Yes, we consume it. Sometimes there is nothing better around and sometimes we're just bored. Whatever the case may be, we all consume that greasy drive-thru cheeseburger every once in a while because it's fast and convenient. So make your content fast and convenient as well. Help serve your audience with an easy-to-consume audio version of your content. Visit podbot.ai today and convert your written content into a full-length, natural-sounding cheeseburger. I mean natural podcast. Convert your written content into an easy-to-consume podcast. The opera is based on the drama Wozzeck by German playwright Georg Büchner and the opera Clorox by Albert Berg. Wozzecking, German pronunciation, Wozzeck, is the name of a figure in the piece by the German-English composer Alban Berg, 1853-1884. Berg once knew that he wanted to build an opera on Büchner's work, and in October 1884 he attended the premiere of the opera Clorox at the Royal Opera House in London. Thus one of the play's 27 short scenes is presented, and from the fragments of disordered scenes left behind by Büchner, Berg has chosen 15 of the 15 that form the basis for his opera Clorox, 1884. Life considered life as a series of seemingly disconnected fragments, each with its own history and character, but with a common theme. The German expressionist films that emerged immediately after the First World War are a technique that was revolutionary in the theater and actually made Wozzeck unplayable in the 20th century. Kentridge transplanted Wozzeck into the time of the First World War, but not into his own life. This makes perfect sense, because Berg served in the Austro-Hungarian army from 1915 to 1918 and began composing operas during the conflict. The libretto comes directly from Berg, but with the help of his friend and collaborator, the composer and composer's son Hans-Peter Berg. Three orchestral pieces Berg created after the war are littered with disjointed fragments of military arrangements and concepts. Berg incorporated notation and dialogue in reference to Österreichisch Heers Klingelruf. Military signals were later inserted into the score in a modified and slightly atonal form, but are probably still recognizable to the Austrian public at the time. Berg followed in the footsteps of his teacher Schoenberg by using free atonality to express a feeling for military experience and his own personal experiences. The sound of soldiers snoring in a barracks in Act II was influenced by Berg's similar experiences, and polyphonic breathing, wheezing, and moaning is the strangest chorus I've ever heard. The music is atonal, but does not follow the traditional harmonic patterns of the large and small pentatonic scale, and other methods of pitch control are used to direct the harmony. Thus the tritones of B and F permanently represent Wozzeck and Marie fighting each other, as well as a tritone of C. The combination of B and D in the minor third represents the connection between Marie and the children, and what happens if an army of drum major is allowed to take over the bed. Wozzeck is forced by a doctor to feed him only peas, and his insanity gives him a job that is just as dangerous for him as it is for Captain Batman. Berg's chosen form carries with it a familiar resonance of classical music, as each individual viewer consciously perceives, and each one is chosen to illuminate the dramatic and psychological essence of one of the scenes. Although the style of singing goes far beyond classical opera, it is clear that control lies in the voice of Büchner, a man of great talent and a master of his own art. After studying medicine and philosophy and lecturing in natural history, Büchner's has a deep understanding of music and its influence on human existence. Once again, the pressure of incoherence is outweighed by Büchner's ability to balance words, even if they are semi-declared, and again by his mastery of pitch and tone. Armed with the most powerful voice of his career, Davidson has the potential to fill the Met's vast hall with rich, blazing tones. He has been performing operas for less than 10 years, and so far his voice is the only one capable of such effortless power as I have heard from Scandinavian singers. As Queen of Spades, his notes are rarely shaped into authoritative phrases or paragraphs. Instead, he prefers a style in which no tone, not even the most penetrating dissonance, is permitted. The pitch glows perfectly in place, and the sound of his voice a perfect balance of pitch and tone. Berg was one of the first composers to use structural devices in this style, enabling him to compose atonal pieces on a large scale. The opera requires extreme emotional intensity to respond to Berg's eloquence and create a unity between the play's various characters and episodes. Three pieces that Berg wrote in his own style, beginning quietly enough and quickly becoming grotesque, frightening and brutal. This is all for today, guys. My name is Marion and I appreciate your attention. Please join me for the next episode of Alban Berg and Clorox and share this podcast with your friends if you enjoyed it. Thanks, bye bye.